welcome to Two Boomer Women. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. I've been talking with Boomer Women for almost a decade now. Well, I guess I've been talking to Boomer Women all my adult life. Reinventing myself several times along the way, though, but always focused on us, Boomer Women. With this incarnation of Two Boomer Women, I'll be interviewing other women who have a message of interest for our demographic. If you want to hear about or learn about something specific, let me know and I'll find someone who understands us to talk about it. There's a contact page at twoboomerwomen.com. If you want to be a guest on Two Boomer Women, bring it on. There's an application form at the website too. Finally, this show is all about conversation. We women know its value. We know how to do it, and we must perpetuate the art form. So let's get started with today's show. Hello, Boomer Women. It's Agnes here with another episode of Two Boomer Women, the podcast. And as sometimes happens in the podcast world, I was unable to get the timing right for my next guest and her interview. So I'm coming to you today with an editorial piece, and I'm going to talk about housing. Now, there's all sorts of issues that existed pre-COVID, but COVID has certainly brought them to light. And the most noticeable current issues are the elderly living, so care facility living conditions, and the associated COVID death rate, especially in the early months of COVID. Younger age groups. They've had job losses and they have had resulting housing losses. And yes, I understand that oftentimes there has been legislation passed to make sure that didn't happen. But bottom line is, when you don't have any money coming in, not only can you not afford your housing, you can't afford groceries and all sorts of other things that are necessary to living. The real estate prices are skyrocketing in many areas. And all of this goes hand in hand with loneliness. And that has been a current theme for the last year. Physical distancing and young people, homelessness, and the mental health issues in every demographic. You know, they're separate issues, but they're all interrelated issues. I'm going to start with the elderly, as that's the age group I know best due to my career. I feel quite strongly that the staffing and funding levels of residential elder care has been ridiculously underfunded, underrepresented, under-talked about, just everything for decades. And I'm not sure just when private business thought elder care was a good investment, but the minute stockholders enter the mix, I can almost guarantee that frontline needs will suffer. And I chuckle when I hear politicians now worrying about care and profits not mixing. I've been saying that since the 1990s. Now, I've had to argue for department funding, and I was recreation, not nursing or nutrition or cleaning. Wages in elder care are usually commensurate with education, which means nursing and admin are often the best paid. And notice that I don't say well paid. With cleaning and laundry staff, the least paid. First of all, I don't know if you've ever reviewed WMIS manuals, but that's no easy feat. But as we've learned from the pandemic, facility cleaning is just as important as nursing and nutrition and socialization. So if the actual dollar part of elder care could be dealt with, I want now to address what could be what the actual housing might look like. Now, I've worked in facilities with four-bed wards and single and double rooms. The push for single rooms only has been the norm for a lot of years. But in the same conversation, even without a pandemic, is the subject of loneliness. And loneliness for elders results from many possible events. Loss of spouses and friends with age is the most obvious. Loss of mobility can cause friends to drift away. With our global world, families are often no longer local. And especially in our westernized countries, family care of elders has become much more rare. As an aside, I heard a term the other day, weird countries. And that means westernized, educated, industrial, rich, democratic countries are much more likely to be the subjects of study, which normalizes their findings and results. While they're only 12% of the world's population, So I think we have to be really careful with what the weird countries come up with. But back to loneliness and elder care, perhaps the push to private accommodations needs to be revisited. While a first-time resident into a facility might demand private accommodation, they might be nervous of anything else. Many friendships are made, and those bonds can be strong. Within my own elder care experience, I remember one woman who, along with a very outspoken daughter, was insistent that all she could consider was a private room when the only bed available was in a four-bed ward. She took it, of course, because that was the only bed. She was waitlisted for a private and was fortunate enough, well, fortunate for her, to have one become available within about 6 weeks. At that time, she refused to move as she didn't want to leave her new friends. You see, along with new friends, friends who share much that old friends might not understand, there's the fact of safety. If a frail elder knows that there's someone else sharing accommodations, they're reassured that a fall or some other event won't result in them lying unfound on the floor until the next mealtime. And yes, I realize there might need to be a little work and effort put into finding compatibilities, but that's the norm at any stage of life. I do feel strongly that a continuum or a variety of rooming possibilities needs to be a possibility. And if the right developer or planner is found, room designs can be such that if one of the residents, or even both, or yeah, I'm thinking two-person rooms, if one of the residents need privacy because of a pandemic or palliative needs, for example, then the option is built in. As I say, with the right developer or planner, like it needs a person who knows what they're doing. And while I don't have any experience in other types of congregate housing, could my model be a possibility? Perhaps one of you know the answer to that. Moving down the age scale slightly, it was in the early 2000s that I heard about Britain's OWCH, that means Older Women's Co-Housing Initiative. To quote from their website, and the link will be in the show notes, "We are OWCH, a group of women over 50 who have created our own community in a new purpose-built block of flats in North London. As an alternative to living alone, we have friendly, helpful neighbors." In one form or another, this is actually a thought I've had for myself. Even a large house with four or five other older women is my concept of a lovely way to age in place. I'm going to move now to the under 50 cohort, well, at least the ones who aren't firmly entrenched in home ownership and employment. The majority of our service workers in every sector are in this demographic. If we could start with those who provide services to our elderly and health compromised, and with those who keep our basic needs, like food, fulfilled, and pay them by the social value of their work, not by the visibility of or education needed for that work, then they might not be so precariously perched on the housing ladder. Back to that weird acronym that I just used, many of our service workers are from those cultures and social backgrounds that do take care of extended family and can't see their less fortunate neighbors go hungry. If they're bearing the weight of stretching their incomes to help people who could otherwise become dependent on social programs and housing, then putting some of the money saved into their pockets, whether it's cash or household subsidies or tax breaks, that seems reasonable to me. And yes, I know some of my concepts, if enacted, would attract the nefarious. But at what cost compared to the extended monetary and social issues created by big business running elder care facilities and programs? And yes, I realize that any number of professionals could shoot holes in any of my ideas, but I'd like to see what the futurists of the world could do with them. Included in the under 50s are, of course, young people still trying to figure out which ladder they want to start to climb. In the meantime, they are most of our food and alcohol service staff, our grocery clerks, and our retail workers. Dispense with them as a cohort and see what would happen to society. It would not be pretty. If they could be guaranteed a livable income with some sort of housing security, they would perhaps have enough stresses removed that they could advance their education or consider how they're going to save the world. And I don't mean that facetiously or sarcastically. So many of the young people I see, both in real time and in the press, are conscientious, very environmentally aware, and not afraid to stand up for the environment, the socially disadvantaged, and causes of global concern. And unlike me, they have a much bigger supply of energy to do this. I'm not sure if I need to add qualification to my words here. When I address an issue or a concept in terms of a demographic, I'm not excluding other demographics who are part of the issue. If I can digress briefly, recently BC's premier, BC is a province in Canada, if anybody doesn't know that, recently BC's premier spouted off about young people not blowing it for the rest of us. Poorly stated? Oh, hell yeah. And I haven't heard him apologize or rephrase it either. But as I've said to a number of younger folk with their backs up, just like so many spout off about boomers and the problems they've created, if I haven't been part of that particular problem, I let it go like the proverbial water off a duck's back. On the other hand, if I'm guilty of a charge, then I need to reassess, decide on the validity of the accusation, and possibly, probably even modify my behavior appropriately. I ask young people to do the same. Now that so many of us oldies have been vaccinated, and the COVID variants of concern are wrapping up and wreaking havoc on the under 40 age group, you need to understand that you're not invincible. It could happen to you. And no matter how healthy you are, health professionals can tell a myriad of stories of young people who have been felled of late. And I use the word felled gently. They're also dying. And as a parent and a grandparent, I can assure you there is no greater grief than losing a child. And that's not the voice of experience. That's just the voice of a woman who can't imagine the extent of the grief. It would be so great. That digression can actually lead me back to housing. In a university city like mine, more housing for young people needs to be considered. Housing with social areas. Social areas large enough to accommodate the social activities of the people who live there. If there's even one young person listening to me right now, wouldn't it be kind of cool to be an advisor to planners who were creating safe and guaranteed and affordable housing for you while you go through that stage between leaving home and creating your own home? It would help with a variety of social issues, as well as being an isolatable area if a pandemic did crash through our lives again. Your lives, our lives. And again, yes, I know it's pie in the sky and many young people would balk at it, but where are my futurists to fine-tune my thoughts? You must be out there. Now, so much of my soliloquy thus far has addressed social housing. While I feel that social housing is a norm worth returning to on many levels, and the norm, the successful norm for a great percentage of the world's population, I do remember feeling that home ownership was the be-all and end-all for any adult. And I think at least one of my children are feeling that imperative currently. But another thing the pandemic has shown us is that much work can be done off-location, aka from home. This leads to many people who no longer have to consider a daily commute looking at buying a home. Now, while this isn't the only factor leading to skyrocketing house prices, it is a driving force in many smaller communities who've been used to more easily affordable house prices. Every day I hear stories. I mean, people buying in small communities, sight unseen, just, you know, because they can. Offers coming in at hundreds, yes, hundreds of thousands of dollars over asking. offers with reasonable conditions being trashed immediately. Now, conditions like inspections, that's pretty reasonable to me. But yet, if you put a condition on your offer, it's immediately just disposed of. It's not considered. Asking price offers. So you go in at the asking price, being sent back for reconsideration, which means offer over asking. Now, when modest houses in a community start at $1 million, and $500,000 gets you a 500 square foot condo, something needs to be done. This is one of the few world problems I don't actually have an answer to or even suggestions about. But someone out there with a heart must have some ideas. I think that's basically the end of my soapbox rant. While I managed to stay on topic fairly well, I think, there's the underlying knowledge that so many issues, locally, federally, globally, need input, consultation, cooperation from so many levels of government, so many different users, and so many different casualties of what currently exists. While I was prepping this podcast episode, I was scheduled to meet a friend on Skype. She's an expat living in the Dominican. She's had her own set of issues dealing with the government as a Canadian senior, and she brought up a whole new set of issues around housing and the senior population. I can't steal her thunder, and they're actually new to my discussion of this with you, so I'm not going to mention them right now because, as I say, that would sort of be like stealing her thunder. Judith and I talked about some of them, and we've talked about them before as she tried repeatedly and unsuccessfully to get some answers from a government department. I managed to talk her into coming on Two Boomer Women as a guest to discuss the issues she's encountered, which can't be unusual or unique to other expats. And don't tune me out when I use the word expats, because the whole concept, the way we look at it, the way we have phrased it in our private conversations, would be of advantage to both the Canadian taxpayer and the Canadian government. So while you sort of think, oh, expats are out there and they're rich and everything else, no, they aren't always. But as I said, I don't want to go too far on this because I'm going to end up stealing her thunder. But yeah, I hope you keep an eye on those issues and wait for my interview with Judith. I really hope you leave comments on this issue. Leave them where you found this podcast episode, or you're always welcome to leave comments at twoboomerwomen.com/join-the-conversation. You can also find me on Facebook or LinkedIn, and I'd love to hear from you at either place. I'm also always looking for guests for Two Boomer Women. If you're a woman who has something of interest or importance to say to Boomer Women, there's an application form at twoboomerwomen.com. I'm also getting some interesting feedback from several men, so I'm considering a Man Friday episode. Let me know what you think of that idea. In the meantime, thanks for tuning in today. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles, and I'll be back next week with another interesting guest. Possibly at some point in time, another soapbox. I'll see you then. Thanks again. Bye-bye.